It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we will share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, interviews with some of your favorite musical artists on Arkansas Sounds, content from the Butler Center's collections, information about what's happening in the library system, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the Cals Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio Cals, including links to resources mentioned in our segments, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org.
Want to know what's happening in the world of Cals? The new programming guide will help you navigate the variety of youth and adult programs, book clubs, movies, and more across Cals' 14 branches, the Ron Robinson Theater, the Butler Center, and River Market Books and Gifts. Look for the programming guide in a branch near you or visit cals.org. Hello, and welcome to Primary Sources, a featured production of Radio Cals. Here on Primary Sources, we focus on people who are making a difference in Little Rock and Arkansas. Some you might have heard of and some you haven't heard of, but probably want to know about. Check out cals.org/podcasts for a free podcast of Primary Sources interviews.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Primary Sources, a service of the Central Arkansas Library System. I'm Matt DeCampbell. This podcast chronicles the lives of prominent Central Arkansans, and we have one such one with us today, Miss Susan Altrui. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
And you are now the director of the Little Rock Zoo.
Yes, that's correct.
And I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that when you were young and growing up, you did not think, when I grow up, I want to run a zoo.
You know, I never thought that I would ever be a zoo director, that's for sure. And believe it or not, even when I was in high school, I always thought I would be an attorney. I was involved in the debate team, which is really nerdy, I realize. Never thought I would be involved in a zoo, but I love it. I have always had a passion for animals. When I was a little girl, I had all these stuffed animals, and I would take them and I would set them on my bed every morning, and they would be like my own little zoo, if you will. So maybe there was kind of a hint when I was a little girl that maybe one day I would be a zoo director because I was directing my stuffed animals. So,
yeah. Well, let's start in the early years. Just talk a little bit about, you know, growing up, where exactly you spent your time and what you got. I mean, we have a taste already of the things you got interested in, but kind of what led you down those paths?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Central Arkansas. I grew up in Sherwood, I went to school here in Little Rock. So I went to Horace Mann. I'm a proud graduate of the Little Rock School District. Firm believer in public schools and especially the Little Rock School District here. Junior high at Horace Mann Magnet, and then went on to Parkview for high school. And when I was in junior high, there was a teacher there, Miss Nichols, that kind of saw in me that I was good at doing communication, and was involved in speech and drama. And she said, you know, you really should get involved in debate. And that was really interesting to me. And I liked to be in front of people. I liked to talk, and I liked to be involved in being on stage. And so I got involved in the debate team when I was in high school. And it's funny, too. I also kid because I come from an Italian-American family, mm-hmm. and we like to talk a lot, and we use our hands a lot when we talk, and we're very expressionate, so I was able to kind of hone those skills a lot, and that's helped me throughout my whole life to be able to communicate and to be able to think critically. And so even today, Even as a zoo director, I find myself being able to use those skills. So I always thought that I would be involved in politics or be a lawyer or something. I went on to do debate when I was in college at Arkansas State University. I went to Arkansas State University for their communications department. They've got a wonderful college of communications there, studied communications there. And then went on to Colorado State University, where they also have a great graduate program in communications. And then I taught debate there. Again, thinking I was going to go to law school after, until I actually started to talk to some attorneys, and every one of them said they were miserable. So I thought,
that'll shift you.
Maybe I shouldn't be an attorney. So I went and got some jobs working on some political campaigns. What brought me back to Arkansas from Colorado was I worked on General Wesley Clark's presidential campaign. That brought me back here. Then I worked on some other campaigns, but realized that I didn't want to be in politics long term. I was a contract lobbyist for a little while, and then eventually said, you know, I really want to get involved in nonprofits. I want to do something that contributes to the community, but is something where I can just really kind of sink my teeth into it, kind of like a tiger, but something where I can make a difference. And I just saw a posting. It was actually at that time in the paper, because back in that day, that's where you looked for jobs, not online like you do now.
Right.
But I saw a posting in the paper for a job as the director of marketing and development for the Little Rock Zoo. And said, well, why not? You know, I'll apply there, and I like animals, and we'll see what happens. I didn't even think I would get an interview, quite frankly. But here we are a few years later. I often joke I traded one zoo for another. So,
right, you're very true with far more tame animals. Okay, so I want to go back through some of that before we get to the zoo days. What did you have any favorite roles during your time in drama in junior high school?
Oh, gosh, let's see. So I was in The Crucible when I was in high school, and I never had major roles. I was always in the chorus, but I was Sarah Good when I was in The Crucible. So, but it wasn't a major role, but I was Sarah Good, which had like maybe two lines.
Right. But also,
and I was there in the chorus, you know. So yeah.
Also, a good warm up for politics. The Crucible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And what once you started getting into debate, what drew you to it? I mean, obviously that you had teachers and mentors who thought you should do this, but then once you got into it, what kind of clicked for you?
Oh, I think it was being able to argue both sides of an argument and understanding that there were two sides to an argument and having to critically think that through. You know, before, I think it was like I always thought, oh, well, there's always this one side and there's always a right and there's a wrong. But when I got into it, it was realizing, because you're forced to argue both sides when you do debate.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do the affirmative and you have to do the negative. And
regardless of whether
you
agree with
that's
those.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
And so it became this kind of fun game where you had to explore both sides, and it opened up my mind is what it did. And I got to learn a lot more about issues that I never probably would have even explored had I not done that. But it was fun. It gave us an opportunity as students to learn more about certain issues and certain ideas that I think we never would have learned about. For me, it was fun because I just dug into it and I was good at it. That was the thing, too. I won a lot of awards at it. I was good at it. I applied myself to it and was able to succeed at it.
That does help your nerd cred that you say that you expanded your mind in high school through debate.
I know, right?
Yeah, crazy, wild child all the way through.
Yeah.
Okay, and so then when you finish in Jonesboro and get your communications degree, then why Colorado instead of staying in Arkansas?
Well, you know, I looked around at the different graduate programs that we had here and out of state. And at that time, Colorado had one of the best in the country. And not only that, but I was offered a teaching assistantship to teach their debate team, which at that time they had one of the best debate teams in the country. They had just won a national title at that time. I knew some of their debaters, it helps when you're given money to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that was a big part of it. But, you know, that reputation and being offered the teaching assistantship was a big reason why I chose that place.
And so when you came back to work with General Clark, Was that during the draft Clark phase?
It was.
So it was before he was actually an announced candidate.
Yeah, I did that for a little while and then jumped on to the campaign after that.
Because that was, that was an interesting campaign just because of
right.
the genesis and the
oh, yeah.
and the growth. And it was such a different time then, all that
oh, yeah.
all that long ago.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
So you keep your toes in politics for a while. And did you just sour on politics in general, or was it more just the push to, I could keep doing this, but I want to do something a little more...
It's a tough life.
...contributory.
It's a tough life working on political campaigns. You know, you're always looking for the next job. You know, a campaign has a finite time frame. So you're looking at the fact that with the campaign, it starts and then it ends, because when the election happens, well, the campaign is over, no matter if you win or lose. So the people that work campaigns are always looking for another job, mm-hmm. Unless you work for a consulting firm. And even then, you might be looking for another job. You know,
yes.
I mean, if you work for a consulting firm that's not winning a lot of elections, that can be problematic. So it's a tough life. Now, there are people that love that life. They love the adrenaline rush of, you know, getting involved in it and being able to be a part of something that's meaningful, and you meet a whole bunch of new people all at once and you form these bonds that are really incredible, and you all work for something and it's fast paced and you're working these really long hours and it's stressful and it's fun and it's incredible, and then the election happens and it's exciting, and then there's nothing after that. So it's very emotionally trying. It's very exhausting physically. So, you know, it's definitely something I think that when you're young is a really great thing. And when I say young, I mean like your early 20s. But after that, I think it's hard to maintain. And there are people that do it, though. There are people that do it their whole lives, and they just really like that kind of high and low and the high and the low. And I think it's very similar to even working in theater. You know, theater productions are a lot like that. You know, you have a group of people that come together, and for a short period of time, they work on something, they produce something, they do it, and then they go their separate ways.
Where's the next gig?
So
consulting or politics.
That's right. It's a very similar kind of adrenaline rush, and some people just feed off of that. But it was very physically and mentally exhausting for me. And I really wanted to be in something where I could have something stable, where I could contribute to the community still, where it was meaningful, but it was a little bit more long-term, where I could plan, and I could be a part of something that had vision that was contributing to the community, but it was a little bit more growth in the long-term.
I think I can say this without being insulting to either group, but you went from the political arena and all the politicians and the lobbyists and those people to a world of zookeepers and vets and two very different types or breeds, if you will, of people.
Yes.
So
yes.
What was that like walking into the, you know, once you got the job at the zoo and started in, what was the, or was there like culture shock for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and to me, I get along with so many different types of people. It wasn't hard for me. I think it might have been a big adjustment for a lot of them because, you know, I'm a different animal, you know. And I'm not a traditional zoo person, if you will. So
what is a traditional zoo person? I mean, is it someone
more
who's
introverted.
Come up through?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Introverted.
Much more introverted. Someone who is much more science and much more into zoology.
Study the field.
Yeah. Now, and that's not always the case. And I think that's changing. Now you're seeing, especially people that are in the keeper ranks, they're much more extroverted because there's this more of an expectation for them to be involved in keeper chats and interact with the public. So that is changing a lot now. But, you know, 12 years ago, we had a lot of keepers that were much more introverted, and the expectation was not there for them to interact with the public. So, and even now, we still have some that don't really prefer humans. They like their animals,
well,
and that's okay.
That's their job.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So it's a very left brain, right brain kind of thing with communications people and the animal people and the veterinarians sometimes. But now we're kind of seeing a change in that a lot in this field. But even now, even amongst the director ranks, what I've noticed is that there's a lot of them that have come up through the animal rank. And they don't understand communication. They don't understand those things as well as they probably should.
Governmental
relations,
yeah.
et cetera. And that's not to say that it's a bad thing. It's just that's just not their experience.
Just with it, yeah.
And so for me, I had to learn all of those animal facts and all of the science part of it on the job. So that's where I had to learn. So it was just the opposite for me.
Aside from the people then, what were some of the first things you remember learning about a zoo that you didn't realize or thought differently about before you were working for one?
Oh, gosh, there was so much. I think that the most interesting thing was the conservation work that zoos do. That was, I think initially I thought that zoos were mostly about entertainment, and I didn't realize the massive amount of conservation work that zoos are doing, especially zoos that are accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. We participate in what's called the Species Survival Plan, and there's a tremendous amount of coordination that goes on with those programs. And I had no idea. I think that was probably the most enlightening thing I learned when I first started at the Little Rock Zoo was the coordination that we have with other zoos. That's a really interesting thing. The Species Survival Plan is run by other zoos and the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and there are a group of experts for particular endangered species that sit on an advisory board for that particular animal. And then there's a stud book for those animals, and they have literally the record of all of the medical and behavioral histories of those animals. And then they make recommendations for all of the animals in all of the AZA zoos, which there's about 230 right now across the country. So, for instance, the chimp SSP. So they're looking at the entire chimp population for the entire country and what's going on with that population and what animals should go to what zoos based on what kind of room we have in the zoos, you know, who might be building a new exhibit, what animals could we place there. Also looking at what animal could be bred with what animal to produce a strong offspring based on genetics, but also too looking at things like companionship. So what animals need to be placed with what animals for the best welfare of those animals, creating family groups, in some instances creating bachelor groups. If we've got young males that need to be placed together because that's part of their natural history to have a bachelor group in some instances. It just depends on what the situation of those animals in the particular zoo might be. So there's a lot of coordination that goes on between the zoos that gets behind the scenes that a lot of people don't understand that deals directly with the welfare and the conservation of that particular endangered animal. And that's something that's really fascinating.
And bachelor group, I assume, is a technical term. Because like a bro herd, like, you know, I mean, I kind of feel, especially for monkeys,
yeah.
I feel like, and speaking of the different animals, has your favorite types of animals changed the more time you spent around them?
Oh, sure. Well, it's hard for me to pick.
I mean, I don't want you to pick who your
that.
Yeah favorite one is now,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, walking in the door, were you like, oh yeah, I totally loved these, but
yeah.
Yet then these were so, you know.
Oh, sure. So I always have liked big cats. That's always been a thing for me. I love cats, small and large. So that was an immediate favorite. But there's so many more animals that I like now. Penguins, huge deal for me. That was the first thing that I raised money for was our African penguin exhibit. So they're a huge favorite of mine. But there's so many other animals that I like. We've got some of the best bears you've ever seen. Of course, I'm biased, but I love sloth bears. I think that they're just a beautiful species. Also, too, the great apes are just fascinating to me. We've got some really wonderful great apes at our zoo. And when you watch the great apes, they're all so different, too. The behaviors of the orangutans versus the gorillas versus the chimpanzees are all very different. And it's interesting to see their social structure. So that's also something that I've found to be really interesting and love to watch them and to see what they're up to. And of course, right now, one of my favorite animals is really based on the personality of that animal. We have Trudy, and she's a gorilla. She's 60 years old. She is the oldest gorilla in human care in the world. So that's a real testament to the kind of care we give at the Little Rock Zoo. But she's a character. You know, she kind of does her own thing, and she just, you know, kind of sometimes frustrates the keepers, but they're okay with it. You know, she goes outside and comes inside when she wants to, and they're okay with that. So
they don't have much choice.
That's right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a thing, you know, and that's with any animal. You do what the animals want you to do. So
once you came in too, you really kind of expanded the different fronts of community outreach.
Yes,
I mean, obviously Boo at the Zoo already existed, but then you were like, what's everything else that rhymes with zoo and we can make an event out of it?
Yeah, right.
Like, between brew and woo.
That's right. Woo with the zoo, brew with the zoo, zoo year's eve. What can we rhyme? Exactly. That's right.
And so what, you know, what was your approach to doing that and the ability and success of bringing maybe people to the zoo who aren't parents, who aren't naturally going there, who aren't naturally animal lovers to kind of see this piece of their town or their state?
Sure. So one thing that I think is important is that the zoo be available and be accessible for people of all ages. And so that was one of my goals when I started, is I wanted people of all ages to be able to enjoy the zoo. So we started some after hours events, which we really didn't have any when I started. So we started Wild Wines 10 years ago, which is now turned into one of the largest food and wine festivals in the state with 50 restaurants and hundreds of wines. That's an event that we do in May. That's a fundraiser. And then, of course, Zoo Brew that you mentioned. It's a craft beer festival. And those have really caught on around the state. You see craft beer festivals just almost every weekend now for other kinds of nonprofits here just in Little Rock. And then, of course, Woo at the Zoo, which is about animal mating behaviors, which is another kind of young professionals event that we do after hours. And the content of that is just hysterical because there's so many fun animal mating facts that we can talk about. And of course, when you throw in beer and wine, you know, it gets even better. So,
and how much convincing did that take with some people, the idea of, okay, at night, we're going to bring in a lot of young adults.
Yeah.
We're going to give them beer and wine. And
it
then
really
we're
took no convincing
set them
at
into
all.
The zoo.
It okay,
they were
no,
okay.
Everybody was like, "Yes, let's do it."
Oh, you know? Okay. Well,
our keepers were all about it. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I think some people in some of the administrative ranks might have been like, "I don't know," but really, I mean, my boss was all about it, and I was very fortunate that Mike Blakely, who was my boss, the zoo director up until just recently, he really encouraged me all the way through and was very supportive of me, saw from the very beginning that I had potential as a leader. And there were very few things he ever stopped me from doing. So maybe that was good or bad. I don't know. But he always encouraged me. And I'm very lucky to have had a boss like him. Because he let me develop as a leader. He encouraged me to be a leader, and that's why I'm in the position that I'm in today.
What is one of your favorite mating facts that is safe for podcast, although really podcast you can go anywhere,
there's,
but given
there's
our audience,
so many. There's
but,
some
but
good
give
ones.
It, give a little,
I got some good ones,
give a little
yeah.
tease because this event will come up again. And
oh, sure, sure.
You'll be wanting to get people
so
there.
Rhinos are actually fascinating. So a rhino female, before she will mate with the male, she will ram him at 30 miles an hour to test his strength.
That sounds like some dates I've been on. That's, wow.
Yeah.
So, and so what kind of response is she looking for versus, you know, what's a positive response versus a negative response to the high-speed ramming?
Well, you know, if he falls over and he doesn't get back up, then she's not going to have anything to do with him. But, you know, if he can withstand it and if he might come back at her, then she says, all right, well, you can take it.
So it's so it's basically like a rhino tipping test.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Much harder than cows, I would think. Not that you should ever tip cows.
No, not that you should.
That's a PSA.
Yeah, tigers are pretty interesting,
cows.
Too. They're very... They're,
don't
they're
tip
violent.
A tiger.
No, would, don't tip a tiger. No, okay. But they're different. You know, they can be very violent with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll come out, and the female will come out just swinging, you know, with those claws, and she'll come after the male, and she's expecting the male to fight back, and then she'll eventually submit. But, you know, she wants him to fight back a little bit to show that he's got the strength in him, you know. But she'll come out just rawr, you know. It's interesting.
So a lot of testing of potential mates
that's
in the
right.
animal kingdom.
That's right.
Much like in the
much
human
like in the
end
human.
Of the animal kingdom. Yes, yes.
Oh, yes.
So as you go along through the years, were there times where you're like, okay, this has been great, but I think I might want to start going somewhere else? Or has it always just been, you know, how much more involved can I get? Or were you clearly on a path that you found yourself on.
Yeah, I've always been on a path with the zoo. I mean, there may have been, you know, one time or another, I thought, oh, maybe I could do something else, but very rarely, you know, and especially in the last probably 6 to 7 years, I've been on a path to be in a leadership position with this zoo. There was no doubt in my mind I wanted to lead this zoo and wanted to stay in Little Rock and build something for Little Rock and be at Little Rock. Little Rock is important to me. The zoo is important to me, and building the zoo is an important cultural attraction, and something that teaches about conservation is important to me.
And now that you're director, before we get into the looking too far forward, how have you seen zoos change during your time there as far as their role in a city, in society? Because they've always had a very distinct appeal and very distinct criticisms. So how have you seen those shift or rise or diminish during your time?
That's an excellent question, because there's been major shift, especially just in the last decade with zoos. And really, you've seen zoos change just in the last years, and it's for the better. And we learn more and more about animals every single day that influences the way we care for them, and a lot of things about them. And I think it's been wonderful, the change that we've seen this last decade, because we're shifting much more to conservation education. And also, too, zoos are shifting towards what we can do to save animals in the wild. The Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is the accrediting organization that we're a member of, is a leader in conservation education and also a leader in saving animals in the wild. So last year, AZA Zoos donated $186 million in funds directly to organizations that are working to save animals in the wild and are coordinating with those organizations that are saving animals in the wild. So you're seeing a huge shift now, where before it was all about, well, we're going to take care of the animals that we have in our own zoos and not worry about those animals in the wild, to the fact that we have this moral obligation now to save animals in the wild. And so zoos are now purposed for, we have to do something about saving animals in the wild, and that's why we exist. So that kind of philosophical shift is huge, that we're not about entertainment, that we're not about just having these animals here, that we're about having these animals here because we're teaching the public about the fact that they need to help us save animals in the wild. And that's a big deal, because resources are now going towards that.
You've been listening to a segment of an interview with Little Rock Zoo Director Susan Altrui for Primary Sources. To hear this and other Primary Sources interviews in their entirety, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. You can find these links and more at cows.org/podcasts. Want to know what's happening in the world of cows? The new programming guide will help you navigate the variety of youth and adult programs, book clubs, movies, and more across Cows' 14 branches, the Ron Robinson Theater, the Butler Center, and River Market Books and Gifts. Look for the programming guide in a branch near you or visit cows.org.
Radio Cows is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, please visit cows.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotts, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.